All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Friday, November 4th. I'm Doug Norrie. That's
James Davis.
And we are going to discuss the full Friday of NBA basketball going on for DFS, FanDuel, and DraftKings. If you're just your first time with us on the NBA podcast, we're from Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings or DFSR.com, here to help you build winning lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You can use for a free 3-day trial to our optimal lineups powered by Lineup Lab that covers NBA and NFL free for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after that. If you started the beginning of the season with us for NBA and simply played $5 double ups a night, subscription has already paid for itself. It's been wildly successful to start the year. If you need any proof in the pudding, head over to the chat room on the site. They're the best. Our users over there discussing basketball are the best case studies that you can have. So just say, is it worth it? You'll get a yes, and we all are happy. All right, bud. The full game or full slate of games going on the NBA tonight, I want to actually just point back one thing to last night, which was the OKC Golden State game. And that game, even though TNT on Sling TV crapped out for me, warranting me to call their customer service and angrily say, "Where's this game? This is the only, I put my kid to bed early last night just to be able to watch this game, and it just kind of crapped out, and I knew it was bad when they said, you know, you're having a problem. Is it TNT? Yeah, everyone's calling. So anyway, I wasn't able to watch the second half of that game though. Last night was a nice indicator of what Golden State can really do to you when they're kind of firing on all cylinders. And this team is really scary. Like, I just don't see how, once they're really going, how teams outside of the Cavs and maybe the Spurs, how they even keep up with a team like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of people, I think, foresaw something like that coming to this season. So we're probably not breaking any new ground. But yeah, I mean, what it really hammers home is that every game is a blowout risk. So yeah, no fun.
They play tonight. They're 10.5. They're only, well, I say only 10.5 favorites against LA tonight. They were 10.5 favorites against OKC. I would suspect it's just a home and away difference. Like, that's really the only reason that they would be favored at the same amount over one team over the other. But they do play tonight with some interesting plays there, which we can break down as we go position by position through the NBA slate. So let's start with point guard. The point guard position has the most uncertainty tonight in that there are injury pieces, some we already know about, some we don't, that probably will affect ownership. Jeremy Lin has already been ruled out he's going to be out for a couple weeks. Randy Foy is back. They have Isaiah Whitehead here. Well, I guess we'll start with him. Is there any safety in the Nets situation? I mean, there hasn't been any safety in the Nets situation, but getting Lin out, where do you see the point guard minutes going?
Yeah, I mean, the Mets are a mess too, but the Nets are such a mess here that it's just impossible to say. I mean, I don't know that they actually have anyone who's a real definitive point guard to fill in after that. I mean, Grievous Vasquez, I guess, is on the roster here, but
he's hurt.
He's hurt too. Yeah. So, right, I didn't even know that. So no, they really don't have a definitive point guard, which means they'll probably lose by a lot and you're not going to get a great value anyway. But maybe if you had like news that Isaiah Whitehead was going to get the start, he's plausible. He had some assists last game. I don't know. I'm kind of grasping here.
Yeah, the Nets are just such a mess. Now, a little clearer of a situation was a guy like Tony Parker is out tonight. When Parker sat last game, Patty Mills got the start. Is he considered, you know, actually the two encouraging things for him are he got the start, he played minutes, they ended up blowing out they played in his start, but he actually had he had some usage in that game, which has been the concern for him when he moves into the starting lineup with guys like Leonard and Aldridge, that he just kind of ended up being almost just like a spot up corner 3-point shooter more than he was actually a point guard in that offense. But he got the looks last game. Is he a safer guy with knowing that we're not going to have Parker?
Sure. I think if Mills were going to start, we would be all over it. Utah, again, not the greatest matchup, but in some ways that might play into his favor just because they can defend some of those other positions pretty well too. George Hill, not really known as a defense first point guard necessarily. So yeah, I think we can take Mills and feel very confident about it. Like, I think he would have gotten more minutes had the game not been a blowout. So I like Mills quite a bit.
Yeah, then it was those minutes rotations that always worried me on Mills in the past, and actually worried me going into that last game when he started, that you just never were sure what the Spurs were going to do. But they seem pretty committed to him at the point guard in actually more of an on-the-ball role, so I don't mind that. And the last one is, I love notes like this, Deron Williams is officially questionable. I mean, what the hell does that mean? Officially questionable? Like,
it means they've locked it in. They know exactly how how what a guy should be if he's labeled questionable, and he's right there. I mean, he is perfectly questionable here.
As questionable as they ever come is right now is what Darren Williams is. If I were to guess right now, I don't think he's going to play. He really hasn't practiced. They've been really down on him. I think there was also an earlier note of something like, we'd be surprised if he played. Let's assume he's out. Berea, I think, would get the start here. Does Berea kind of jump out over the other? I mean, okay, we really didn't mention anybody for the Nets, so whatever, but would Berea go over Mills for you, like sort of in that same price range?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, Berea has done some amazing things out of the starting point guard role in the past. He was carrying whole fantasy lineups for long stretches last year when he was in that point guard one role. And this season, you know, we talk about this often, but the litmus test we like is if a team likes a guy as a backup, then they oftentimes really like him as a starter. Mm-hmm. And Berea certainly qualifies there. Obviously, you're paying more than him for Mills. And I'm not persuaded that we shouldn't just play both of those guys if they're going to wind up in the starting lineup. Like, we don't often double punt at the same position, but I would like him a lot more than, say, Tim Frazier in a similar price range, another guy that a lot of people will play. So, I think both of those are strong looks.
Yeah, it's interesting about Bray and Frazier that you brought that up. I probably would take Frazier. The only thing that – because it's matchup. The matchup against Phoenix is so choice that you Phoenix is just about – is like sort of like in that Lakers kind of camp of – just you want to play guys against them in DFS because they just sprint up and down the court at their pace. But Frazier, the concern there is he got totally crushed in minutes against Memphis. They ganked the starters basically early and he just didn't bring them back in. And the game wasn't totally, totally out of hand. It's so weird when things like that happen for a team that when you just, you know, Frazier was just kind of locked into his minutes, right? 35 or so minutes from the starting point guard. They don't have a lot of other ball handling options. And for him to just go out and play something like 15 minutes or whatever he played last game, 14 minutes. That is my only concern there.
What I'm saying. Yeah. Like that's really, really not great. I'd say if Williams is out, Berea's minutes are a complete lock. So that's what I really like about him there.
We have him at 34 minutes, and that actually might be low considering that they'll play him at the one and the two in that offense. Because he would usually rotate in. He would actually kind of rotate in for Dirk, and they would go small for a little while with sure. Berea. But the fact that they're comfortable playing him at sort of multiple positions at the one and the two probably does keep his floor a little bit higher. I probably would go like the Frazier Berea route if I were to choose right this second, but it's pretty close. There's some interesting point guard plays tonight.
And that's a rich man's problem, by the way. Those are all excellent plays, and you know, when you start off a slate with three great plays at point guard, you start licking your chops about trying to find big money options elsewhere.
Which there are down the line. Now, the other guy to possibly consider here is Curry. They're a huge favorite again. I don't think you can trust it in cash games, just because I think we're going to be firmly in the Golden State can blow anybody out on any night situation here, which we were sort of in with them last year. You know, he was good last night against OKC. The problems are still the same things we talked about, that the points are there for sure, and just nothing else is. 4 rebounds, 3 assists in 30 minutes. I mean, those numbers tick up on a per minute basis just a little bit, especially for the rebounding for him. But I'm just not sure you can trust him in cash games. And it's not because of the skills. It's mostly just because I'm just worried that he's only going to see 30 minutes a night against a team like the Lakers.
Yeah, Curry. I mean, he's obviously got electric upside. I don't know that that's the spot where you want to spend up, though. Like, we often talk about not wanting to punt away from your best plays. But on the same token, I don't know that you want to take a risk to spend up away from your best punts.
So, right.
I mean, maybe that'd be a good... See, I can't even take the temperature of how people will divide out the ownership percentages tonight, but I suspect Curry will wind up being lower owned just based on the huge, huge amount of punts we've got here. So, yeah, a very reasonable big tournament option.
Yeah, there just are other bigger money guys with less cheaper options at the other positions. So that's the case against him for sure. But again, the price is just kind of locked in this low, this sub 9,000 range. But it just might stick there. Like, the rebounding isn't going to be there. The assists aren't going to be there. And that's just really looking more like the case. I'm just not sure you can trust it. At shooting guard, you know, I wrote up Devin Booker to start. Booker, the most encouraging thing for Booker is that he was out 2 games ago with a toe issue and then came right back and played huge minutes last game. And that was really the only thing I was looking for. That means they're fully comfortable with the injury. The injury is not a non-issue for him at this point if he's going to go out a game removed from the toe injury and just play 38 minutes against Portland. Booker is, I like him, but I always get worried with guys that are just score only guys, like just that, and that's kind of the only way that they provide value. Do you see Booker as like safe at his price just because of the way his makeup in the minutes, or is it risky because you need him to kind of shoot the whole game?
Yeah, Booker is kind of a strange guy. I mean, he's a quintessential shooting guard in that he really hasn't provided a lot of other value, but you know, we have seen him so far run bad in terms of field goal percentage and 3-point percentage, while and not totally maintaining his rates at some of the other stats. So if you think, as I do, that, you know, players like him going from 28 to 34 minutes, like, he should probably just increase his rebounding and his assist in some sort of commensurate way. And since he hasn't done that so far, I think we're ready to see an uptick from him. I don't think we're, like, getting away with murder playing him at these prices necessarily, but I do think it's just straight up solid value, and you can take him at these prices in good matchups, which he certainly has one against New Orleans tonight.
This New Orleans Phoenix game is probably the most relevant for DFS tonight, just because these teams play pretty fast. They're both pretty bad on defense, and the prices on most of the guys, like, I can see of all the games, this will be the highest ownership percentages I have is going out of this game for cash. Just the over-under is pretty high, not as high as the Lakers and Golden State, but the prices are priced to move at this point, I think, for a lot of these guys. You know, after him, and I'm not even sure he's like a lock for me, you know, you guys have guys like Clay, who has run bad overall to start the year from downtown. Again, the scoring wasn't really there for him last night again, in only 30 minutes. But again, 5,900 on FanDuel. Is this, you know, with where are we looking at with Clay here? The shooting has been, I mean, he kind of picks it back up a little bit from the field last night, 6-for-17. But is he safe enough at that just because he's cheap?
I mean, I don't think he's necessarily safe enough because he's cheap. I would consider him more of that high upside. You play him and hope that it's his turn sort of play to me. You know, he really just hasn't done a great job paying these prices so far, and that's not totally what you want from a guy who's anything less than, a lot of times in shooting guard, you'll see these tiers break out where you can get guys for like 4,500 to 5,200 on FanDuel. So this is like the Wes Matthews, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, like that's kind of group of guys who, you know, maybe they don't crush it for you night in, night out, but they're fairly solid. Clay in his current role, feels like he should be down in that price range to me. I don't know if that's crazy or not. And it's not to say you can't, like, get away with playing him here against Lakers. I mean, if he's going to play 35 minutes, then he could wind up being a great play. So I don't want to, you know, cast any dispersions on him for that. But it doesn't feel like a slam dunk to me, I guess.
Yeah, last night he finally gets it going a little bit from three, shot 50%. That has been one of his primary issues. But like you said, the minutes are a little bit of a concern. And just those other stats, you know, when you add, we could say this a million times this year, but when you add a guy like Durant, he just takes away the rebounding for a lot of these other guys. And, you know, Draymond has been cut into a little bit, but not as much. But really, it's cut into Clay and Steph. Like, they just don't need to get in the paint as much anymore. They don't need to get those weak side rebounds anymore. And so that's probably something that's just going to stick. They're primarily just, you know, beyond the arc shooters, and that's really all Golden State needs them to be. Frankly, they don't need them really kind of getting down low and pounding in the paint, really for any reason at this point.
I think that's right. I think with Clay too, I think you pointed this out, but it's worth repeating. Like, based on his pass percentages, he should probably double his 3-point shooting rate so far. And if he does that, he's adding another 4.5 fantasy points a game, and he's just kind of fine on these prices. So, you know, he might be actually closer to a cash game play than I suggested.
There's a couple, you know, cheaper guys on the end of the spectrum. The aforementioned Wes Matthews stands to see some, I would see some extra minutes if Darren Williams is going to be out, because they're just going to be lacking another two guard, and he's already kind of a minutes guy. The system just loves him on a week, night in, night out basis, just on lock. Although it's just funny tonight, doesn't love him as much as I thought they would against Portland. And then, you know, guys like cheap guys like, you know, Kyle Korver in a pretty fast matchup against Washington. I guess Nick Young against Golden State. I could see going a little cheaper at shooting guard and just trying to get, you know, some 4 to 5x value out of some of these cheaper guys and hoping that they're hitting some of the shots. But I'll probably end up looking in that 5,000 to 6,000 range, and that's like the Thompson, Booker, Matthews crew.
Yeah, I think so far where my heart is going is double cheap point guards, or like mid-tier if you go Frazier or Barea, I guess, and then two mid-tier shooting guards. I don't see any real reason to pay up, certainly, and I think those pseudo punt guys, like, those are the guys we like to play. So like Korver, for instance, if his role were expanded for some reason for one game, then he might want to show up for me. But yeah, his baseline is low enough to where I'm not super excited there.
And just from the old, like, can't stand rostering guy, because it's so hard to watch him, is Nick Young. Nick Young comes, like, the minutes have been sort of in that mid-20s range when he's been in the starting lineup. All he does is score. He's impossible to watch. Like, from a DFS standpoint, like, he just is the exact guy you just really have to find a very difficult for me to root for, because
sure.
I'm like,
and And he's paid this price in two of the last three nights too. So.
Right, and just might be there. I mean, it will be a fast-paced game. They look to get curb stomped, but he could hit value if he can just see the minutes. You know, moving on to small forward, Durant put up a monster last night. Only had to play 31 minutes, went 39-7, and I mean, his price, he's still under 10,000. I get why, but he's paid the 10,000 price, you know, basically four of the five games so far, and that hasn't always even needed the minutes. Like, he's become the clear, he's just a clear 1A kind of guy that they needed. Like, he's Harrison Barnes plus, like, added Harrison Barnes' role, but he's Kevin Durant, right? So, like, in this offense, mm-hmm. which is just totally nuts. And is he still, even in a blowout consideration, is he still safe considering the price isn't even up into the 10, into 10, over 10,000 yet?
I would say so. I think if you're going to play Durant tonight, it's with the understanding that if they blow the Lakers out, which they probably will, a lot of that will just be Durant raining threes and dunking on people. So right. I think you can feel pretty good about playing him in any format.
Well, the other problem too is, like, guys in that simple, well, not even in the same price range, but you get Kawhi against Utah, which you don't love. Really just hard to take such a, at his price, it's hard to take the volume and pace downgrade that you'll get just from playing Utah. And then, you know, you get other guys that are in sort of the cheaper range. You get Melo, you get Butler, and then you get guys like TJ Warren. Now, Warren's interesting because Warren is shooting a ton for this Phoenix team. I think he's like second on the team in shots right now, which is really saying something when you're on a team with Eric Bledsoe, Brandon Knight, and Devin Booker, like that you can still sort of just find your shot. He's up to 5,900. Do you think you'd want to go up to a guy like Butler or Anthony in that 7,000 range? Or is Warren at 6,000 or 5,900 still kind of a value considering his role?
Well, yeah, small forward, I think, is a really interesting puzzle to solve today because, well, like Kawhi, I think a lot of people actually will play Kawhi just because he was good against Utah 2 days ago or whatever, 3 days right. ago. He had more than 40 fantasy points on this price, so I think some people will go back down that well. I think for me, like, I'm not sure that I'm going to lock into Durant, but just given the incredible value at some other positions, it just seems like if you got to pay up somewhere, and I imagine we'll probably talk about Anthony Davis in a little bit, but he just seems like a great place to do it. So with one slot left over, I think there's a lot of competition here. I suspect TJ Warren will be the highest owned of this next group just because he's in the old, he was a chalk play. He just keeps pouring it on. You know, he's doing the things people like to see, which is having the ball a lot, shooting, rebounding. Like, I find just from a DFS sanity perspective, people just really don't like when their guys aren't involved in the offense, and that's not a problem with TJ Warren. So I think that people will keep playing him even as he gets more expensive. I'd probably prefer not to play Carmelo Anthony just because I feel like he's kind of priced based on his historical performance as opposed to what he's done so far this year. But you know, I guess I could be talked out of that if you have a good case to the contrary.
Now, I actually just bumped down Melo's usage in our system while you were talking about TJ Warren because, you know, he's a guy where we had projected for a few more shots per game than he's actually getting, which makes sense when you have a guy like Derrick Rose now within the offense. And, yeah. You know, if I'm trying to get Porzingis some looks, although they've been kind of hit or miss with that. But this is the Derrick Rose problem. When you have Derrick Rose on your team as you're running the point, he's just not a guy that's going to boost the fantasy value of others around him. And
yeah,
so
he just barrels in and is averaging 17 shots a game. Like, that's a lot of shots to go away.
And it's just terrible for your team. If Derrick Rose is taking 17 shots a game for your team, you're kind of dead, I think. Like, and they it's a shame too, because Melo and Porzingis could really stand to have like a high pick and roll point guard that understands that. And I'm just not sure Rose has run the pick and roll with Noah before, but Noah's not playing enough minutes. But he's not the guy that's going to get the twos and the threes more shots. Just that's not how his game operates. And so it's just a shame. The signing didn't make sense to me from the beginning. It still continues not to. And it's really dusted off the fantasy value of guys like Melo because they're just not going to end up doing any slows on the pace. Like, he's just not a pace point guard. So he just, I don't know. The whole thing seems like kind of a mess in New York. And I just did bump down Melo's usage. What about a guy like Butler, though? You know, Butler playing against, going the other way against the Knicks. Do the Knicks just play too slow for you? Butler's minutes have kind of been all over the place because the Bulls have played in a bunch of different blowouts. How do you see him?
I think I like Butler. You know, the price has become more affordable. And I think, to your point, a lot of that has been fueled by the fact that he has played an erratic number of minutes. But I think that when we've seen basically the two Boston games, when we've seen what the Bulls' sort of overall plan is, that he's executed on that. I mean, the game on the second where he had 35 fantasy points, you know, he did put 21 shots in the air, had 9 rebounds. You love to see that. Shot 17 times against Boston on the 27th. So I think we could also see some pretty significant. Basically, he's done good things in the games where they've been involved in blowouts, like as in shooting a high field goal percentage. He's actually been worse in those closer games. I think when we see that all normalized, he'll settle into being more like an $8,000 player, which means, you know, you're getting him as a slight value here. Although, again, not really crushing it necessarily, but you don't need to crush it to do well in a cash game.
The other guy, and I'm bringing up every guy, so I totally get that, is Winslow is another guy for the Heat. He's been playing huge minutes. He's getting a lot of shots. He's shooting so bad from the field, which has actually kept his which has kept his number, his salaries down so far this year. Now, I will say the matchup against Toronto is not great. Toronto does play a pretty slow-ish pace, all things considered, and they're a decent perimeter defense team. But, you know, with Winslow, if he, you know, right now he's shooting 18%, 19% from three, right? Can't imagine that gets any worse, right? 35% from the field. Could we see some like shooting regression happen for a guy like Winslow and all of a sudden, you know, a week from now he's 6,000 instead of 5,000 on FanDuel?
Yeah, a slight chicken or the egg problem with Winslow for me, because he was so uninvolved in the offense last season. And, you know, that was, I guess, a little surprising. I think people out of college saw him as a defense first guy, but not a guy who just sort of disappear completely like he did last year. This year he's shooting more, but doing so poorly. So it's kind of like, well, was that the story with him all along? Is he just not a very strong offensive player? All that being said, I think that we'll see his field goal percentage climb up a little bit. And it's not like he has been bad on these prices anyway, in spite of his bad shooting. So I'd say the combination, like in a good matchup, he would be a very easy play at 5,000. In what's basically a bad matchup, I still think he's more like a solid, if unspectacular, play. But if it all clicks together in some game, we could see just a monster game, because he can really do a lot of other things well, too. He's a good passer, a very willing defender. And if the points can fall, sure. And actually, I think still for tonight, I would just as soon go kind of cheap on Winslow rather than pay up for a guy like Anthony and potentially even like Butler as well.
Yeah, small forward is interesting for me. This is probably, outside of point guard, this is the most value-packed position, though it's for a few different reasons, right? We're not getting the cheap punt guy, but I think we're just getting these like sort of middle guys like Warren and Winslow that help offset some. Those guys, you know, those price guys in those price tiers go a long way to offset some of the bigger play guys. And tonight there just really aren't that many expensive plays, leading me to power forward, where Anthony Davis sits now at 11-2 on FanDuel. I think he's just a little, like maybe somewhere in that high 10,000s range on DraftKings, 10-9 on DraftKings. Must play for you tonight? I mean, is it really any case?
Yeah, this is your big payoff for getting cheap plays everywhere else. Wasn't spectacular last game. We still don't have any injury concerns. Truly ideal matchup. I think that we'll see him go out there. I don't think we're going to, again, see him settle in the 30s shots per game, but if he shoots 20 or 21 shots, puts up a pile of rebounds against an undersized front court, I think you're going to be very happy rostering him in any format.
Yeah, I think he's the clear, like he'll be the highest owned big money guy for sure. Might have end up just being the highest owned guy on the slate.
He could be, because again, I think you have actually more competition in all your punt slots and less competition in your where do you actually spend up slots. So yeah, he's a slam dunk for me.
Yeah, and especially on FanDuel, and really just both places. The fact that he has dual position eligibility on DraftKings helps, just gives you one more reason to kind of get him in, just because you can fiddle around. And, you know, it's funny with DraftKings. At this point, you know, if you're not using a system, I don't think, like, you know, when I say a system, I'm talking about, like, you know, a projection system.
A lineup optimizer.
A lineup optimizer, right. Sites like Draft, I've been saying this in the chat room, you're just kind of dead. Like, you just cannot, it's nearly impossible for your brain to sift through the amount of just decisions and just different permutations of lineups with these new dual position eligibility things. I mean, even the writing the algorithms, like, I didn't write this algorithm, but I mean, I've been told that it's a difficult thing to write for just considering all the different things. And if you're not using,
well, saw just the increase in the computational power for our really expensive computers that handle this kind of thing, like going from lack of multi position eligibility to multi position eligibility, basically fried them like a right. Just like you'd poured water all over the computer. So it's really, really hard to get it right without something helping you.
Yeah, you just really, really need that. Over the long term, you're going to need it. And but also, if you have it, it gives you there's a crazy edge, because everyone that's not using it, like I said, is dead. It's not the exact same thing for me on FanDuel, because, you know, things are a little more cut and dry over there with the way you build your lineups. You can usually get away without making too many crazy, terrible mistakes, I don't think, on FanDuel. Though, that being said, you're still at a huge advantage having a system sort of pumping out the optimal piece for you. After Davis at power forward, which I think we both considered to be a lock, you know, walk us down the next group. I wrote up Porzingis and Millsap. I'm not sure. It was kind of close for me around some of these. Excuse me, I didn't write up Porzingis. He was a consider. I wrote up Millsap and Markieff Morris. Like, but I don't know. A lot of these guys sort of fall into the same range for me tonight.
Yeah. So Porzingis, I think Porzingis will wind up coming down in our rankings as we go into lineup blocks tonight, because like Melo, he's kind of sneakily lost some usage with Derrick Rose showing up there, and he had been doing some other things kind of around the periphery to make up for it. But when that stuff kind of regulates back to where we expect it to be, and I'm talking specifically in terms of the rebounding, and then he had one game where he ran really hot from the field, I think he'll settle in at something less than a $6,900 player eventually. And I'll caveat this all by saying still a reasonable value. Like, you're definitely not killing yourself by playing Porzingis, but we're just going to see some games where he disappears from time to time just because of the other high usage guys on his team, right? So there's that piece for me. Markieff Morris is actually another interesting guy where he's added minutes this season but not added shots. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly not something our projection system was expecting to see, especially he's been a little bit more efficient this season as well. So I don't know exactly what's going on in Washington. It could be that, you know, he was seeing more minutes with the second unit last year, but I'm a little troubled by that, right? I mean, for him to shoot a ton of games or a ton of shots rather early in the season and then to settle in at just 8-7 in his last two games kind of feels like a coaching specific, like, hey, dude, you don't shoot 18 times a shot a game on this team, sort of
well,
thing.
Not, especially not when the whole starting lineup is healthy. You know, Washington ran into injury problems last year with guys like Beal. You know, Wall sat some games. Otto Porter was pretty much there the whole time. But
they had front court issues. You know, Gortat missed some time.
So. But right, like when you know, you can look like a more of a volume shooter when you're just even just missing one of those guys, like just for a couple of games. A guy like Beal, who's going to take a lot of shots, that's going to cut into a guy like Morris. I don't mind Morris in the cheap. The matchup's not ideal. I kind of like it going the other way a little bit, facing Washington, but you know, power forward, this is actually why I ended up kind of liking Millsap. Millsap's the opposite. Millsap, you know, without Horford there and without Teague there, has seen a dramatic increase in his usage this year. And that makes sense. Like they didn't replace him. They didn't replace either of those two guys with heavy offensive guys in Howard and Schrader. So, it stands to reason that the shots had to go somewhere, and they clearly gone to Millsap, right? Like he's been just shooting more per minute. I think probably a little high on the usage bump that we've given him, but overall he has been the direct guy that's gotten more shots per minute for the Atlanta offense.
Yeah, I like Millsap. I think, again, we saw that kind of come back to earth a little bit in his last game, and it's kind of tough to know exactly where the truth lies. Like, this is, of course, always the danger in trying to determine things based on small sample sizes early on. Mm-hmm. Like, the Hawks, I think, found themselves in the unexpected position of trailing the Lakers, and, you know, that probably shifted a lot more of their focus towards shooting threes and things like that. But, yeah, I think Millsap is a very solid play. I think he's a reasonable payoff for getting cheap money and elsewhere, so I definitely don't mind going Davis and Millsap and kind of calling it a day, not worrying about the high risk cheaper guys.
Right, and that's the position you're afforded is by going cheap at places like point guard, like double cheap at point guard,
right? Slam dunk cheap guys at point guard and shooting guard.
Right, this is where you can just pay up, and maybe you're not paying up for like crazy great value on a guy like Millsap, but Millsap is just a high floor guy with the way they've used him, and I'm just not as worried about like his minutes, say, compared to like say Porzingis, who. And Porzingis just hasn't really been playing enough. Just I didn't really need to go back to him totally. But he just, like, again, it's another year of we just can't play this guy 34 minutes on lock. Like, he gets buzzed out of rotations. I don't totally get it. And it's a new coach, too, which I thought we'd see. I thought we'd see some of that stabilized, some of its blowout stuff, but not always. Like, he's just not a guy that they play a lot of minutes. I don't really totally get it. All right, let's finish it off with center. The center, once again, another night of what do we do at center? we've been, you know, last night, we kind of hemmed and hawed and then went back and forth and ended up playing Boogie, which felt weird to pay that much, like to pay close to $10,000 for Boogie on a night where you had this insane over going with guys like Durant and other big money guys like Westbrook. To pay up $10,000 for Boogie didn't feel great. He ended up being fine. He did a classic Boogie thing where he got it to halftime with like no fouls and then just instantly just tried to make up for it, you know, by starting the third quarter and just fouling the crap out of everybody again. And he kind of did come down to earth, though. Anyway, long story short, that's Boogie from last night. What do we do? What are we looking at with center here? Does it feel great to you to pay up for a guy like Whiteside? I mean, $8,400 for, he's been taking more shots this year, but I don't know. It's just like $8,400 for Whiteside feels like it could go wrong more than it can go right.
Yeah, I mean, pile Whiteside right in there with guys like Porzingis who you know, just some days they get the minutes and some days they don't. And when they get the minutes, like Whiteside actually had three very solid and consistent performances against Orlando, Charlotte, and San Antonio, where he had 14 or more rebounds in each of those games. He's still the blocks king for sure. Definitely don't mind playing him. Like, I guess if I wouldn't choose any other center in a similar price range over him, but if I were choosing between him and a guy like Millsap, that would be a closer call for me. They just are so different. Like, Whiteside is the really high upside guy who can come in and explode for, you know, 30 and 18 and five blocks and just win you a big tournament, whereas Millsap is just never going to do that. But Millsap also just won't go out there and play 24 minutes in some game.
Right.
So yeah, I don't mind Whiteside. It's just the old question of, you know, trying to choose between overall expectation, which I suspect Whiteside ends the season with more points per minute than Millsap, and safety. So it's a devil's bargain there, and I'm not sure which side is correct.
And I just don't love the matchups kind of going down. Like, I don't love Valanciunas against Miami. That just strikes me as wrong, going the wrong way. Gasol against the Clippers, his minutes are still on cap. I mean, he's probably the best talent from just an offensive talent, but you know, he played 38 minutes last game and kind of didn't do anything. And I just don't love the matchup against the Clippers. I don't know. I mean, after these bigger, and by the way, in Gortat going against Dwight Howard strikes me as incorrect, and I think it's too expensive for Howard. So I kind of just fall in between on all these just sort of mid-tier dudes.
Yeah, I think that falling in between is probably correct. I mean, another guy you wrote up and I think is a worthwhile look is Tyson Chandler. He's kind of like a broke man's Hassan Whiteside in some ways. He's like half of Hassan Whiteside, essentially, right, where his minutes kind of go up and down. His performance goes up and down. But at this point, we have four out of his five games where he's been very reasonable on his $4,500 price tag. And in two of those, he's just excellent, where he had 18 rebound games against Golden State and Portland. So, you know, he could show up and really do some damage for you. A nice matchup with New Orleans. I could see him being the overall best points per dollar play of the night. And I could see you being sick to your stomach when he's got, you know, seven fantasy points going into halftime and three fouls. So,
right. Well, this is the thing. Like,
good luck, I guess is what I'm saying.
This is where I'm fine just going cheaper. And I know people will say, why Tyson Chandler? I'll say, it's not necessarily Chandler. It's his price is more than, and his price and the other options are just less than ideal. That's more where it ends up, right? Like, now Chandler, you would think that in a situation like this, you know, the Pelicans have Davis, though he's not like an on the block rebounder more as much as he is like sort of just like, yeah, transitional rebounding. And that actually helps a guy like Chandler, that if he's not going to have too much competition on set pieces on getting rebounds, then I am encouraged by it. But then I could also see his minutes get reduced because they want to play Len, because they're not as much of a defensive liability against a team like the Pelicans, where they just don't really have a big inside presence. So that's, I get a little worried about where Phoenix goes with their rotations, because like, you're not totally incentivized to play a guy like Chandler here if you think the game's going to be sort of up and down the court.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and I think it'll probably wind up being correct just on the basis of, you know, again, that trying to use wisdom in terms of where you spend up and where you don't. Center doesn't necessarily feel like where you want to spend up.
And then even guys like, you know, sort of in that same price range that are decent fantasy guys like Mason Plumlee, we've seen the minutes trend all over the place for him as well. Like, Portland will play matchups depending on their game. They don't need to play a guy like Plumlee against Dallas, I don't think. They can afford to go a little smaller against that team. So you get a little bit of Bogut, but Bogut's not on the court long enough to really worry about. So it would incentivize the Trailblazers, it would seem, for them to just kind of go a little smaller against Dallas tonight. So I can't even trust those things. Anyway, I hate center. I hate center every single night. It's a very difficult position. It's just a very difficult position to roster in general. And yeah, it's just because a lot of these guys sort of fall in between.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I don't know. Oftentimes you're kind of grudgingly just fitting a center in around the rest of your best plays, and tonight strikes me as sort of no different.
All right, that is it for us today. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com for short. Go over and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which calculates optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, free for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after that. And you're all set. That also includes our NFL projections. We'll be back again early next week talking NBA and NFL. Until then, buddy, have a great weekend.
All right, man. Adios.